Welcome to the Brave Little Podcast, coming from Dallas, Texas, Los Angeles, and Sacramento, California. Here's Skylar Teo, Aaron Alvarado, and David Stauffer.
Welcome to the Brave Little Podcast. We've got ourselves a brave little homecoming, because I've got Aaron and who else?
I'm back,
and I'm beef to your cheddar. I'm back, hey. And this time I'm a cowboy. I'm back. You remember that T.O. song when he came back?
Hey, David. Cowboys? Can you put the DJ air horns in?
And then can you play like the actual T.O. track? Because I'm pretty sure you won't care.
Absolutely.
Dude, I love the T.O. man in his song when he became a cowboy. Like, I was so on board with him. So on board.
Oh, man. Dude. Well, yeah, so on board. He was one of my favorite players, I guess, after Steve Young was that. Well, no. Even during Steve Young's time. T.O., dude, on the Niners. Amazing. For him to go to the Cowboys was absolutely heartbreaking. And I'm happy to see, in the grand scheme of things, that he did his best years in San Francisco. That's really awesome. Yeah. The year we drafted him and had him at their like summer training camp or whatever, they have that in Sacramento. And I went and with my dad to a whole bunch of those. And from the early on, you could tell T.O.'s got it.
Top five wide receiver of all time?
Top five? Top three.
Ooh, wow. Jarrett?
He's better than Moss, that's for sure.
Oh, no, he's not better than Moss. You're out of your mind. Get out of your mind.
You know what I found is, talking to people who listen to this podcast, is they love our sports talk segments. They come for the movies, but they stay for the sports talk.
They stay for the sports. Well, it's great.
People who love movies, they love sports, because that's just the thing about nerds. They love sports.
You know what they don't love is the politics talk.
And politics.
They don't love that. I want to be the first person in America to stand up and say, I support Donald Trump making fun of Morning Joe. I support Donald Trump making fun of low IQ Mika. And you know what? Maybe she was bleeding. But my real question is, what were they doing at Mar-a-Lago if they didn't want to hang out with Donald? He was president-elect. What were they doing there? Like, legitimately.
That's the thing. They're friends with him. They're friends with him.
Yeah. So then,
that's the...
Okay, that's a good point. I take my point back.
Can we get the Project Veritas guys on the case? Ooh. Let's figure out what's really going on there.
Dude, but they do good work. I like when they got when they broke the law with the whole abortion thing and then like got arrested. Jeez. That was fun.
So I will say this though about Trump. If he's gonna cross the line with these insults, right? And this morning the stuff about Mika, you know, absolutely crossed the line. Why that one? She was bleeding from a facelift? Like, just go all the way. Just get vicious, right? That's just it seems like a weird thing.
But isn't
like
it weird that all the Republicans have chosen this moment to turn around and, like, say, Trump, no, this is bad.
No,
like,
but have they, though?
Yes. Representative Mia Love of the 4th Congressional District of Utah said, Oh, Donald, we should not speak to women this way. Sarah Huckabee Sanders said, this was a really smart move by Donald. Okay, wait, I guess she's not a great example. But everyone else is pretty much saying.
She defended him.
Yeah, she did. I love Sarah Huckabee Sanders. What a great American.
She's amazing. She's really incredible.
So gosh darn like her dad. It's just amazing. It's like a spitting image.
Yeah. No, I mean, there are conspiracy theories on the internet that it is Mike up there. But
ooh. What if during one of the press briefings she just got out of base and was like boom 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 boom
boom. Oh, Skylar, it's good to have you back.
I'm back.
He literally just scatted on the show on the pod.
Yeah, he sure
amazing.
Did. He sure did. Oh, Skylar, since you've been gone.
Great song. That's a great song, right?
Great
there.
Kelly Clarkson song. Since you've been gone and you haven't been able to give your takes on movies, I would love to know what's been your favorite movie this year that you haven't been able to talk about?
I'd love if you guys could
like
go through and list the movies that have come out and I could just give you my faves.
Not going to do that.
I haven't seen a ton of movies.
Other than The Mummy, which you personally told me was your favorite.
I liked Get Out. Get Out was a fun
Get Out
movie.
Still in my top somewhere. Yeah.
I liked the part where the dad said, I voted for Obama. Because like, I really just resonated with that character.
Because you voted for Obama.
Twice.
Oh, twice. I just did it once.
Yeah. You got to vote for Mitt at some point. I get it.
Well, I didn't want to cast two ballots in one election. It's illegal. Yes. Don't want to be one of the 3 million.
That's true. I saw Logan. I got that on digital.
Logan's one of the best, too.
I enjoyed that a lot. Guardians 2, a good time. I think I liked that more than you guys liked it by a large margin. When I first came out of the theater, I was like, wow, that was not nearly as good as the first one, but still a great Marvel. Upon further inspection,
it's a fun movie.
I think it's right there with the first one. Mm-hmm. I have some real issues with the whole father-son thing, but besides that, it's really good.
What about the music? The music wasn't as good either.
I don't agree.
What's Kurt Russell's character's name in that again?
I believe he's
Stuntman Mike.
Stuntman Mike. What's his character in that one? No, his ego.
Oh, right. Okay. Okay. Ego?
Igor.
Igor?
It's Igor.
Ansel Igor?
It was Ansel Igor, a.k.a. An Solo. Wow, did we just bring this all the way back around to An Solo's newest movie?
So we already did a whole episode on the Han Solo reaction, but I am curious, Skylar, how excited are you about the new changes with Ron Howard coming in? You love Apollo 13. You love NASA stuff. Ron Howard, spokesman for NASA.
If you're going to make a movie about space, the best movie about space so far has been Apollo 13. And so it just makes... No, I mean, I kind of am at this point hoping that this movie burns to the ground and ruins Kathleen Kennedy's career. Like, that's how much I love Miller Lord. Like, I will take them over her, even for all the good she's done. Because I think she... Like, this whole thing and the fact that Han Solo himself, like, was a little snitch about this, it all makes me so mad. And I just, those boys are my, like, they're my men. The Lego movie is one of my favorite movies of all time. Wow. 21 Jump Street is just such a freaking fun movie.
I'm not sure if you've been keeping track of the leaks and stuff about what's going on behind the scenes, but there have so far been exactly zero articles talking about how this was Disney's fault, and thousands about the tumultuous behind-the-scenes environment.
Very close track, and I know exactly why that's happening. And they're respecting their NDAs. But, like, if I don't think Star Wars fans are going to fall for this. I think they're going to see right through this bullshit.
No, just, you're wrong about that. I am concerned. We talked about it in the pod. But, like, a lot of, like, the Star Wars blogs I subscribe to, the podcasts I listen to, like, the really intense fans, like, way bigger fans than me, all of them swear by Kathleen Kennedy and Lucasfilm and have absolutely no loyalty whatsoever to Lord Miller. And they're like totally like, oh yeah, it sounds like they were making a crap movie. Good thing they came in and Kathleen Kennedy saved the day. Like, it's r/TheDonald level of like she can do no wrong.
Yeah, it's like allegiance to Lawrence Kasdan is really weird to me. But I mean, yeah.
He is weird too.
I mean, as a 20, so I'm 28. The 28-year-old, I'm so much ready to go roll and die for Miller Lord than I am for some geriatric dick who wrote a cool movie in the 80s. Like, that's cool, but, like, Miller Lord have it now. And they're not making some Ace Ventura movie. Like, that's preposterous. And for them to be trying to flood this whole story in there is
so that's
so
the
ridiculous.
That's the thing, and is like, that we heard it was like this Ace Ventura vibe, but not just a vibe, like literal stuff. Like, they have Han Solo jump up and bend over and talk with his butt.
Yeah, that sounds great. I'm on board with that. Like, see, I just trust Miller Lord that well. Like, I just, see, the thing, honestly, that I was least excited about with this movie was the casting of Han Solo. And
oh, I still feel fine about that.
No, like, because we've seen so little of him. And I was... I just think of him as being an actor from the like early turn of the century Hollywood, which I know is unfair, but I just have a hard time seeing him. It's just such a hard thing to try and play this role that's only been played by one man.
It is. It's a hard thing.
Expertly.
It might be a lose-lose. We'll see.
Yeah, I mean, like, really, I would have been so much happier if they would have chosen to do a young Lando movie. And
just, oh, like, I 100% agree. Yeah, yeah.
Because Lando is such a less iconic character. Still iconic, but way less so. And if there were, like, things that changed, we wouldn't be nearly as, like, nitpicky about it. And Han could have been there as a side character. Like, Chewie could have been there, young Chewie. Like, it could have all been fun, but it would have been, like, more in the world of Rogue One, where, like, it's these characters we don't know as well. And it's not so biblical. Like, this feels like you're messing with the canon. And
no, so, I totally agree. I mean, it was a bad idea for a movie to begin with. The main reason why I was excited was because of the director. So without them, I feel pretty hopeless about it.
I hope
the good
sucks.
News is... The good news is, yeah, dude, I can kind of agree with you. Like, I almost want to go completely the other way so we can just cast it out as an outlier rather than a half-good movie, right?
I think the worse now, it is, the more it vindicates Miller Lord.
How do you feel as complicated as I do with the fact that, like, this, you have this feeling of dread and doom with this Han Solo film, and then you have episode eight coming up, which I'm complete opposite end of the spectrum because I think it'll be brilliant.
Which is the reason I feel that way is because I have complete confidence in the director. Which,
could you imagine a press release right now where in the middle of editing 8 they yank Rian Johnson out of the director chair?
No. I mean, first off, it's way too late. Although, I mean, it's, I guess it's only like 4 months ahead. When was Han Solo going to come out?
In May. So less than a year. It was going to be coming out in 11 months.
There's no way that they hit that date. But that's...
No, 0% chance they hit that date.
It's still insane. But yeah, Rian Johnson... Looper is enough to give all the rope in the world he needs. And so then to add on Brick and...
Well, I was going to say, Brick. It's Brick for me first, but yeah, yeah.
No, it's all about the fly episode of Breaking Bad. That's dude, the best episode.
Looper's and Ozymandias. He directed the penultimate, too, didn't he? Or the one before the penultimate?
I think he directed...
Yeah, the pre-penultimate.
No, he did the penultimate.
Did he?
Yeah, I think so. The penultimate's the... what's the name of it? That one, you know.
I don't know, but you pulled up your browser, which meant our video feed is going in and out because it's using your bandwidth. Just FYI.
Well, I've had my browser up the whole time.
He doesn't care.
No, I don't think he does. We do video these now, by the way. Just, you know.
Well, I know. My bandwidth's fine. Don't you worry about that.
Dude, I got a great segue. I'm really excited to use it. Actually, I don't. No, I do. So Alden Ehrenreich, or whatever his name is, he was one of three finalists for the Han Solo role, right? Taron Egerton and Ansel Elgort. Honestly, I know you're concerned about Alden. Do you think Ansel would have made a good Han Solo?
This is going to shock you. But yeah, I mean, like, obviously I think Taron should have gotten the role because I'm such a huge Taron fan.
I just think he looks so way too far different from
a
Han Solo.
Who is he?
British, and we don't need a British Han Solo. I don't need that.
Taron's so good, though, man. He would have killed it.
He's good. I like him. I don't want him in that role, though.
I think Ansel would have been better, yes. I like Ansel.
Is Ansel a good actor?
Han Solo is a good actor.
No, Ansel.
Han Solo, his DJ name. That is his EDM DJ name, because he's an EDM DJ, because of course he is. But his name is Antolo. I think he's a good actor. I think he's, you know what, like, he's kind of a punk little kid, because he grew up in the New York art scene, and his mom and dad are both incredibly successful. And so in that way, he's kind of got the, the girls, HBO girls.
Dunham.
Lena Dunham.
Lena Dunham.
He's kind of got the Lena Dunham thing going on where a lot of life has been handed to him so far, which sucks because I really don't like Lena Dunham because I feel like she will not acknowledge the fact that so much of what she has been given to her. Like, that never comes up in her work, but it's always about, like...
It's called privilege. Yeah.
She's just filled with privilege. But, But, yeah, Ansel, he has kind of the same issue. But, like, he's not writing stuff. He's just acting. I feel like he's a great actor.
Yeah, it's not.
Like,
yeah, right. I
thought he
killed
it in Baby Driver. And I thought,
well,
Fault in Their Stars.
Let's talk about his performance.
I liked him.
Let's not start there. But we'll definitely get there. We're going to talk about Baby Driver. Edgar Wright's, I don't know exactly the official number of films that he's, like, officially full feature films that he's directed. But there's really four that people know him. Right?
Well, this is five.
So this is the fifth.
And there's a sixth before him, but it'll be seen it.
But nobody's seen it, right? So, and that is the Cornetto trilogy, right? The Shaun of the Dead, Hot Fuzz, which is my favorite of the three, At World's End, and then Scott Pilgrim versus the World, which would have been a better movie if it had been filmed in Atlanta, but whatever. I'm kidding. So, out of those, now this is the fifth movie. I'm curious, just right out of the gate for you guys. I know there's recency bias here. Where do you rank Baby Driver amongst the five films of Edgar Wright?
For me, I'm putting it third. I put it behind Shaun of the Dead and Hot Fuzz, but ahead of World's End and Scott Pilgrim. Or Scott Pilgrim and World's End.
So you put it behind Hot Fuzz and Shaun?
Yeah, I think Shaun of the Dead is one of the funniest movies that have ever been made. And it's like one of the most incredibly watchable movies. Like, I could just watch it if it's ever on TV, and I was actually watching TV back in the day. I'll just put it on and just watch it.
It's
it's just like, what, it puts me in such a great mood. I love Shaun of the Dead.
What about you, Aaron?
I put Baby Driver number one. I like Hot Fuzz. I like Shaun of the Dead. And I think Scott Pilgrim was incredibly innovative and super fun movie, but I cannot stand Michael Cera. So I put Baby Driver number one, probably Shaun of the Dead number two, and then Hot Fuzz three. But I was just so impressed by what he did with Baby Driver that it goes to the top of the list for me.
So it's number two for me. I put Hot Fuzz still number one, but a close second for me is Baby Driver, and then Shaun of the Dead, At World's End, and then Scott Pilgrim versus the World, which is more of a video game than it is a movie, but we won't get into that. You guys, so that's one for Aaron, two for me, three for Skylar. Interesting, Skylar was the one who liked it the least out of the group. But we had, all three of us had huge expectations going in.
I'm not sure I disliked it. Like, I think I maybe like Shaun of the Dead and Hot Fuzz more than you guys like it. Because I love this movie.
Well, let's hear the gut reaction in the theater, the experience. I really want to know what this was like watching it for you guys. Because for me, I was expecting a lot. I had huge expectations. And this was an exhilarating movie to watch in theaters. I mean, absolutely exhilarating.
I kept thinking to myself how much I was enjoying it as I was enjoying it. Like,
yes.
I kept smiling and just, especially the first two acts, was just like so into it and so thoroughly enjoying my theater experience that, I remember reevaluating, like, hey, I had really high expectations for this, and it's blowing away those expectations. And like just being so happy, seeing like John Hamm's hairdo, I'm just like, man, David's going to love the fact that him and John have the same hairdo now.
I couldn't get over it. I was so in love. I was so happy.
Like, John Hamm is amazing. Like, this is awesome.
All I could think about was like, I can't wait to rub this in Skylar's face. That John Hamm and I have the same.
I know
haircut.
John did not have like hair over his shoulders, so I feel like a real schmuck. But no, I mean, he looked awesome. His character is pretty great. His girlfriend or wife's character was about as shallow as the kiddie pool, but that's fine.
I don't want to get into spoilers just yet. I was going to make a remark that may have been a little bit spoilery, but I don't want to get into that just yet. I will say, for me, this storyline is pretty conventional. I don't think there was anything truly innovative. Like, maybe some interesting stuff, but nothing like, I mean, this was pretty conventional. But, like, Edgar Wright wanted to make a heist movie. Like anyone would want to make a heist movie, right? And there were clear... Edgar Wright does this. He makes these even more, like, overt references to movies he loves, more overt than Quentin Tarantino does. Like, for goodness sakes, he called the pizza place Goodfellas. You flip through the channels, and he comes across Fight Club. There's a Monsters, Inc. line.
Little Rascals.
Heat. There's literally... There was, like, a shot, as you know, to use Skylar's words... a shot-by-shot remake in the middle there of a scene from Heat. It really was. I don't know if you guys are familiar with what scene I'm talking about, but there's a few cuts real quick that were definitely exact angles back-to-back of the movie Heat, which was awesome.
By the way, the Monsters, Inc. stuff is some of the funniest stuff I've seen in a movie in a long time. That really resonated.
It's great.
It really... Like, that's why I can't believe B-More didn't like this movie. Like, Pixar reference in the movie, he's not going to love it? Come on. The man loves Pixar more than anyone.
B-Mart doesn't rank Monsters, Inc. as high as you and I do.
That's right. He hates Monsters. He likes Monsters U more. He doesn't.
He loves Monsters Be More. Yeah,
man, Be More.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
Be More. I know you're listening to this right now. Come fight me, bro.
Yeah,
that's an insane.
Aaron, by the way, has seen neither of those films.
Of course, Aaron.
No, I've seen them. My wife actually loves the Monsters Inc.
series. So I love Monsters.
It's not a series. It's one movie. Then they made a terrible prequel.
Whatever.
Terrible.
Now, if you want to talk about a great series,
I took her to the university.
Yes, yeah, Cars 3. Mwah. That's a masterpiece of filmmaking.
I didn't see it. Did you actually see it?
Of course not.
Okay, good.
But I did see 47 Meters Down, which was incredible.
Yeah.
No,
so,
I didn't.
I'm going to get to you, Aaron. You put this number one over the Cornetto trilogy and the Michael Cera movie. What was working for you? Like,
so right off the bat, you talk about the in-theater experience, and this is one of those movies that you need to experience in a theater specifically for the sound system. This movie's incredibly loud. It's very, very loud with good reason. The music in this is super loud. It's really up front in the mix in most of the scenes, and because it drives the entire story, actually most of the story. But it's vital. Yeah, it's vital to the entire telling of the story. Mm. And for that fact alone, I love seeing it in the movie theater itself. Our theater was just like, it was incredibly loud. So the bass was bumping, and I thought it added to the experience for sure, without a doubt.
Totally.
And we had a packed house. I went to the local art house theater here just because I wanted to see it with other people that I knew would love it. And they did. So it had a very positive reaction. There was basically a standing ovation at the end. But it was really a fun time. And that's what my goal was in seeing this movie. That's where my hopes lied in seeing this movie, was just to be entertained, to have an incredibly super entertaining summer movie. I didn't expect it to be deep, and it's not.
And it's not.
Like you said, the story is very conventional. But I expected it to be very fun, and it was. And I wanted, you know, like every moment I felt like this is so much fun. This is exactly what I had in mind. And I was so grateful to be there enjoying the movie in that moment.
I mean,
so
people describe movies as being a fun ride, you know, or that was a fun experience. But like, I really can't remember the last time that something was like actually legitimately fun and felt legitimately like a ride. There was a rhythmic pace to the editing of this film that matched the music, which was interesting because Edgar Wright is doing that behind the camera and obviously in post. And the main character played by Ansel, is literally doing that with the actual driving and the bank robbery, where he like even makes the people in the car wait and then leave on a certain beat, you know, which is kind of an interesting interesting little wrinkle to that. But like and I know he didn't make it this way, but it's almost like Edgar Wright just put together a playlist that he really liked and was like, I want to make a movie that makes me feel like this playlist makes me feel.
Dude.
And so he built it around, it's like he started there and built it around those beats.
That's
why it feels so rhythmic.
So I was listening to a podcast he did this last week where he talked about this, and this is a movie he's been wanting to make for 20 years.
Yeah.
And so it's been on his mind for a long time. And something that's really unique about this film that does not happen is, it was screenboarded second for second. Like, every single shot was screenboarded on, like, a everything where music was playing was screenboarded for second to second, because he wanted to make sure that the beats and everything worked exactly how the music worked. And so he shot it to work with the music. So when they're on the set, they're, like, looking at his screenboard, like, looking at everything and how the timing works, and making sure that they have every shot so it works just within those timings. And then when they're editing it, they did that just so it works with the music. And so that's why, like, talking about the rhythmicness of it, it has that because so much effort and craft was put into this movie, so it has just that effect. And it works. Like, when you talk about movies that make you, like, just smile and that you're just, like, enjoying and you're having fun, like, I think of the Mission Impossible series, like, at least the last couple ones for sure. This one definitely applies to that. And it did something new, which was it incorporated this idea of, like, it's a 2-hour-long mixtape music video heist movie. And, like,
that's not a musical. It's not. I've never seen a movie use music like this that's, like, a non-musical.
Right.
Never.
And, it just, it's so fun. And, like, there's moments where it doesn't take itself seriously. There's moments where it loves being a movie, and it just is fun. There's moments where it's serious, like, the tone shifts drastically, but but it never feels like it doesn't know what it's doing. Like, it's shifting accidentally. Like, it definitely is a movie that knows what it's doing, and it's expertly done.
Yeah, to your point, there's a precision to the editing that only could have been planned out, like, in great, like, exhausting effort and detail beforehand. This was not a movie that was, like, improvised, you know, on the spot.
Yeah, Miller Lord did not make this one.
Exactly, right, exactly, yeah.
Well, interestingly enough, Kasdan did write it, so...
Weird. Oh, yeah, I saw that. He got a screenwriting credit.
Yeah. Story by.
I'm curious, how much have you listened to the soundtrack since seeing it?
I've been listening to the Moana soundtrack, but I'm going to get to
it. Oh, you're still on the Moana soundtrack?
Yeah, we're gonna get
there. I'm working on it. Still got Dwayne The Rock Johnson in your...
Yeah, you're welcome. You're welcome.
But, like... It's all I've been listening to, really. I mean, other than podcasts, it's really all I've been listening to. And it's fun because, like, songs obviously can remind you of scenes from movies, especially if you listen to motion picture scores or whatever. But this one, it's just, like, the memory... Obviously, I just saw the movie, so it's fresh. But, like, the music really brings it back in a way that's, like, it's so tied to a certain scene or movement or, you know... And it's really fascinating how they're able to do that. And I also noticed they used stuff that's not actually on the official soundtrack, but they grabbed these little bits of pretty popular songs, like an intro or a little bit of a verse, and use it in these in-between moments and not, you know, just that little 15-second, you know, clip of a song, and then it would, you know, just for a transition point. I noticed that a few different times with pretty popular songs. But, like, Edgar Wright... filled this thing out from beginning to end with music that worked perfectly for it. And because of that, it's such a fun and unique experience. Like, that's really, for me, the main thing. And then he cast people like Kevin Spacey, John Hamm, Jamie Foxx. I to be honest, I don't know if Ansel's a good actor. The fact that I don't know even after seeing it is good, because it didn't really require him to do a whole lot of acting.
Have you seen Fault in
Our Stars? The right age, had the right look. All that was great. But, like, he didn't have to do any heavy lifting with, like, actual acting.
That's true.
What were you saying,
Scott? Have you seen Fault in Our Stars?
Yeah. Yeah, I have.
He's good in that. He's got something.
I mean, are you in a closet right now, Skyler?
Yeah. I'm pretty gay.
No.
No, literal
no,
closet.
I'm in my living room, but the computer is running low on bats. So I got the screen weighted down, so I just have to deal with it for a little while.
You going to make it to the end of the recording?
Yeah, I'm at 22%. I just don't want to get up and get a charger because I'm definitely
smart.
Yeah, not feeling like getting up. So.
Well, don't worry. We'll keep recording through it if you have to. Let's talk about let's move to performances. We talked a little about story, the music, whatever. Who is your guys' MVP in this? Like, who's the standout?
Aaron?
That's a good question. I would say probably Spacey. Spacey, number one for me, because he actually got some stuff to chew on a little bit, and that's what he excels at when he can be a little bombastic. And, you know, he's prone to going over the top, but if you give him the right small role, he can really hit home run. This role I found was similar to his role in Glengarry Glen Ross, mm-hmm. where he's the manager and. He's basically going over the game plan, the Glengarry leads. So it's kind of the same tone where he's the boss. And I thought he played a pretty sympathetic character considering who he was and how ruthless he was supposed to be. I thought that they gave him an interesting relationship with Baby. Kind of complicated. So
are we prepared to broach spoilers now?
Yeah, go ahead, skip to the 36-minute mark.
Let's do
if you
it.
Want spoilers.
Yeah, so we're gonna talk. Let's just go full on spoilers here. So if you haven't seen Baby Driver, clearly all three of us recommend that you do. Aaron, it's your favorite movie of the year.
So far, it's number one. Okay. Yeah, it's right at the top.
So go see it. We're gonna talk spoilers. I don't think spoilers in this case, in this movie, really ruin anything anyway. I don't think this, like, I really don't think it will affect the experience. But if you're hypersensitive to that, that's fine. Stop listening now. But hopefully, a lot of you have seen it. So, spoilers. Is it interesting to you that Kevin Spacey went from this kind of ambiguous, ruthless mob or whatever type guy to, like, right at the end, he turns from being the main bad guy to not being as bad in the span of an elevator ride. That's when things started to like move pretty quickly. That
was his Batman vs Superman Dawn of Justice moment of like, oh, you two are. It's like when he sees the two of them there, he's like, oh, they're in love. You know what? I gotta do whatever I can to get my life for these
it
two.
It felt weird to me, like
love, because we have the same name, Mom. So I'm gonna do anything for you,
Martha.
It's kind of like
my name is also Baby.
Oh,
yeah.
I didn't realize you had a girl. I've also been in love. Look, here's my nephew. He's funny. That part was definitely feels like it was underwritten or underbaked. Like he just went from 0 to 100 really fast. But
no, that's not correct. That's not correct. Because if you remember all the jobs that Baby was doing for him, he was giving him a cut even though he didn't have to. Also, the very first time that he meets the crew and what's the guy from Walking Dead?
John Bernthal. Yeah.
John Bernthal is ripping Baby a new one.
Yeah, he's a terrible
guy. Who protects him? Who's the first one that protects him? It's Kevin Spacey.
Yeah.
So Kevin Spacey has this kid under his
in
wing.
In between these two moments, he's out there threatening this kid's foster dad. He's threatening the kid's new girlfriend. He's threatening
That's because
him.
Of the money.
Like,
that's because of the money.
What money? He owed him almost nothing at that point. He'd like already done all
no,
the
it's,
jobs.
No, it's because he wanted more money.
To make more
he
money.
Wanted more
him.
Money.
Yeah.
It's just.
But that's what bad guys do.
It just felt 0 to 100 to me. Like, I mean,
no.
That's what capitalists do.
So he was a kind capitalist, is what he was.
Sure. No, he had a change of heart at the very end.
So since we're talking spoilers, let's talk this third act, which, thankfully for me, does
it's the best
not,
act.
What's that?
Third act is the best act.
You don't believe that? Do you really?
No.
Okay. To be clear. There wasn't anything in the third act that I like openly didn't like or didn't enjoy. It was still fun all the way till the end. But the first two acts were so impeccable that like the rushed nature of the third act just was a little bit more obvious because of that. But nothing's ever like unforgivable. It's still enjoyable. It's just that like they had a movie to end and they were pretty conventional up to that point in plot. And so in a very short period of time, a lot happens that doesn't totally make sense to me. Now, Baby has a breaking point outside of this post office, which I really was hoping that they would successfully rob the post office because nobody likes the post office. But there was a nice lady. It looked like that worked there.
It was weird to me. He didn't just drive away at that moment.
So that's part of it for me. And also, like, the snapping moment for him to just drive forward and with a little bit of a punk move for Jamie Foxx, like, you know. Kind of a cheap shot. Drives through into the through the windshield. This bar or whatever sticking out.
The rebar. Yeah.
It was the twister death.
What was the breaking point? Because he shot the security guard. He saw him shoot other people before.
I think it was opportunity. So he finally had an opportunity where he could get the jump on Jamie Foxx, and I think that he decided that he was going to kill him a long time before that. There was just no opportunity to do it until that moment in the movie.
You're banking on him not ducking.
Yeah, we don't know that. He probably would have killed John Hamm.
John Hamm was his. John Hamm. You were talking about people defending him. Now, John Hamm defended him.
Oh yeah, they had that beautiful
scene that he was
together,
there. He even had a queen moment.
That queen moment.
Yeah.
Aaron, defend the queen moment.
He took pity on him because Baby is clearly autistic.
No,
so.
He's Down syndrome. It's different.
Yeah, that's different. That's definitely different. One of them you're born with.
This is your first episode.
One's real.
I know it sounds sappy and dumb, but like, I really was endeared to John Hamm's character, not just because he's Don Draper, but like the way he treated Baby, you know. Like an adult, and like he was good. Obviously, Jamie Foxx didn't, nor did John Bernthal. But like, it was cool that, you know, John Hamm was his buddy or whatever. Not really buddy, but you know, he was cool with him. And so, what I didn't love is that we went from, you know, this breaking point for Baby to Kevin Spacey in an elevator ride going from bad to good, and then John Hamm going from good to bad because his wife was really bad. Just really reckless at, you know, ducking for cover. Like, that's kind of on her, right? Like, you blamed Baby, but come on.
They could have
really
easily made that Baby's fault and made the whole thing way more.
Like, Like, way more his fault.
Yeah.
Sure. Like, he could have shot her.
No. He didn't need to shoot her, but he could have, like, driven his car out of the way and left her vulnerable.
The rebar miss Jamie Foxx and goes into her.
No. I'm just saying, like, he could have, like, made some action. Like, his action caused her to die, as opposed to more or less she chose to do the thing she did that caused her to die. Like, she could have gotten behind the
car.
She
did.
But, like, Baby did nothing that really caused that besides killing Jamie Foxx, but...
Did it feel like she knew she was going to die? Like, not like, it was a kind of a suicide mission. It felt like that way to me. She just was like, whatever.
It seemed like they were both about to die. Like, it was very Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, but...
It did feel,
the Atlanta
Police
Department are so incompetent in this film.
Not good. Not a good look.
Man, they just suck at what they do.
No, very bad. Very, very bad, actually.
And there's also one dude in the incident. Yeah, let me just say for this, Atlanta sucks. What a terrible city. And as a city that's like right there with Dallas on the national attention front, I'm just going to go ahead and say it sucks really bad. And like, they couldn't even handle Dwight Howard. Like, they're just a trash place. And
they have a great TV show, though.
Atlanta is a... Oh, yeah, damn it.
Is it a better TV show than Dallas?
Ooh, see, Dallas is way more on the zeitgeist still. I'll take Dallas. Plus, we had a TNT show for like a season. Reboot? But it was a really cool looking movie, but the scenes, like you talked about, Edgar loves, like, it was kind of like a love note to heist movies and to car chase movies. Like,
yeah.
But to put it in Atlanta seems like such a disservice to all these movies he loves, like Bullet, like French Connection, that take place in these iconic places with these iconic views, his iconic sights behind them.
Mm-hmm.
And then he's got it taking place in Atlanta, Georgia, where there's nothing. There's a diner. There's one diner in the whole city, and that's it. It's like, ugh.
Yeah. Well, so
I'm gonna grab the cord. I'll be right back.
Yeah. So it's interesting because I find myself generally would agree with Skylar's take there about like pick a city that's got iconic backdrop. But part of me also feels like we already have enough heist films on the streets of whatever, you know, name the city, New York, LA, San Francisco, Chicago. Like, we've got plenty of those. So I love the idea of picking a city that you wouldn't usually film a heist movie, which is great. And to be clear, I realized that this wasn't some sort of hipster pick to pick Atlanta. It was strictly because of tax incentives. That's exactly why. A lot of things are filmed in Georgia, including The Walking Dead, because of that reason. So that's why. But one, I love not picking a main city. But two, sometimes it can be distracting. Like someone who is from Northern California, it is sometimes distracting, as much as I love San Francisco, to see the Golden Gate Bridge in every movie that has to have San Francisco. And they're always driving across the Golden Gate Bridge when the reality is they're way more likely to drive across the Bay Bridge wherever they're coming from. Like, they're just like way more likely. But somehow in the movie, they're driving across the Golden Gate Bridge because it's iconic. And it actually takes me out of it because it's like, that's not how people actually, you know, what they would actually be doing in the Bay Area. And so, like, I don't need them to drive right by the Empire State Building and to see the Brooklyn Bridge in the background, right? And so I kind of like the idea that, like, I can't name a single iconic landmark other than the Confederate flag. I can't think of a single iconic thing in Atlanta. And so, you know, all you need is roads, streets, roads, and a city. And so the fact that it was never distracting for me, I do view as a positive. Now, I can't defend Atlanta. It's not, doesn't seem to be an exciting city, and it's not like super well known. But they could focus on the driving and the heist, and I felt like it was fine.
So yeah, there's something to be said about that in a new setting. We'll look at Hell or High Water, where we get Texas.
Texas
or West Texas, yeah. Right? And so that's a very nondescript city, but the city itself was used as part of motivation. You know, we have this small town where people are down on their luck. Meanwhile, the setting for Baby Driver is Atlanta, and it's basically, it could be any metropolis. So it wasn't used at all, other than the fact that we know that it's Atlanta. Big deal. That added zero to the story whatsoever.
Then why have it be Atlanta?
So,
like,
yeah, I mean, I would have been fine with just naming it something else. It didn't even need to be Atlanta.
It didn't need to be anything.
Hoopsville.
Yeah.
The one I will say, the downside to Atlanta is that it required people to have accents.
On Solo's worst part was his accent work. There's no doubt.
Ansel's, yeah. I keep thinking you're saying Han Solo. You're really good at saying that. Like that. You're really, really good.
That's his name. It's his DJ name.
Isn't that crazy that he really was almost Han Solo and that's his name?
It would have been insane, but we dodged that bullet. Although maybe he dodged that bullet because then he got to go make Baby Driver. So.
Yep, I think we made. Yeah, I think you're right.
I think there's. No,
I also. Ooh, what if they re?
There's no doubt.
What if they recast? Recast now they have a new director and they bring in Ansel. Well,
so
it would be it would only be the second craziest thing to happen on that set.
I do actually have some insider information on that very front. Ron did have. This is breaking news.
Uh-oh.
He did have Cliff
no,
come
Tom
in.
Tom Hanks.
Cliff Howard came in to do some chemistry tests
Clint.
On screen with
Clint Howard
with you know a few of the other stars. Him and Childish Gambino did a few scenes in the Falcon with Chewie, just to see how Cliff and or is it Clint? Yeah, it's Clint, huh?
Yeah. You know I was gonna say, I was like, I don't know Cliff Howard. Is that like a is that an alt, like a State
it's
Farm
actually,
agent?
It's both of their brothers. Actually, you know what's interesting? Clint Howard, as a child, he was in that Star Trek episode where he played the baby genius. And then he grew up to be an insane conservative who's hideous. Mm-hmm. But due to the luck of his brother being famous, he gets to be in every movie. And so it's just, like, what a beautiful thing life can be, right?
He's the worst part of any movie that he's in.
He is. Well, that's
I think that's safe to
he's
say.
He's the worst part of a lot of great movies.
Yeah, he really is. So for that, I mean, it's notable. But he's truly the worst part of Apollo 13.
Yeah, but with that said, he will probably be playing Han Solo, young Han Solo in the new movie. So just get ready for that. Breaking news.
Yeah, that's going to
be
nuts.
And yes,
Bmore,
I'm being serious.
Oh yeah, that's right. Because he doesn't know. He doesn't know when we're doing like when we're
yeah,
in Bittsville.
He thinks we're in Bittsville sometimes, and I'm living in no Bits County.
So, okay, can we talk about John Hammond a little bit more though?
Yeah, Juan Hamon. Should,
man, someone's got a crush. I think
no, guys. Well, yes,
third
but
John.
Do you buy that he was that like maniacal and upset at Baby?
Not even like, a little bit.
Again, small problems in a movie that I loved thoroughly from beginning to end. But it was just the character switcheroo there of Kevin Spacey turning into a good guy and then also John Hamm turning into a bad guy. Like, look, I got over it. It's fine. But it just seemed like a weird decision to make that late in the game and to do it so quickly.
Right. But they gave you the exposition that he killed a man for looking at his wife crooked. Remember that?
We don't... I mean, alleged.
But then I would rather have had it been he looked at his wife crooked and that's what set him off as opposed to him having nothing to do with his wife dying. You know, like, it just didn't feel like it was part of what was set up for us. Like, it felt like a non sequitur.
How upset were you guys that the dude driving in the blue truck, the citizen that was trying to save the day, how upset were you that he ended up living?
Oh, I wanted him to die so bad. Although, I also liked that his way of going out was just driving and then rolling his truck by making a poor choice.
It was like a fluke.
It was a fluke, like... Are we in movies not supposed to like let accidents decide these kinds of things? Like, he just had an accident.
He just had a Well, it was a dumb mistake. He shouldn't have drove down there. I mean,
oh man, I like that. That sequence was pretty fun because I like a car chase that doesn't involve police.
Yeah,
I like citizen on citizen car chase. So that was fun.
And
that's good. Good
and
point.
We saw this in the trailer, but like I really have been waiting a very long time for a good Michael Myers, Mike Myers joke, and that's as good of a joke you're going to get out of that material.
That was quality writing right there.
That's good.
I hate that they wasted that in the trailer. Why would they waste that? It's such a good joke.
It's the funniest moment. It's the funniest moment in the movie. I wish it wasn't in the trailer. It's so good.
Monsters, Inc. line is funnier, I think.
Really?
Oh, the Monsters, Inc.
Well, you know what else was funny?
The Monsters, Inc. line resonates more with me as someone who likes Monsters, Inc. more than I like Austin Powers.
It got the bigger laugh in my theater.
Really?
Dude, I think...
Well, actually, mine too, but that's because everyone knew the Mike Myers line.
Exactly. I think people love Monsters, Inc. I think there's something weird about Pixar movies. Despite them being these these international phenomenons, there's something personal about them. Like, you feel like they're your movies, and so when somebody makes a joke about your movie, it feels like very cool. Same with, like, when he turned on the TV and it's Little Rascals playing, You Are So Beautiful, like,
yeah,
that's the movie me and my brother fell asleep to every night when we were like age 8 to 10. Like, we had one VCR.
Yeah,
we had a VCR TV in our room. We put that VHS in. It'd play, then at the end of the night, it would reset, and then we'd just click play again in the morning. So, like, I know the first 15 minutes of that movie memorized perfectly, but then after that, I'd always be asleep. But, like, so...
And Edgar Wright probably does, too.
Yeah.
And he puts these moments in these films for that reason,
it
just, right?
It felt like he gets it. He gets what it is to be
a
28-year-old white male. I wonder what people who aren't white males, and Aaron, you're included in this, how they would view this movie, because I feel like they would see the...
I'm telling you, my theater was incredibly diverse, and they loved it.
I thought you were at an arts theater.
It is, but it's in North Hollywood. Okay. It's incredibly diverse.
So yeah. I will say another big laugh, and also one of my favorite moments, was when they all start freaking out, understandably, about him recording all these conversations. And they go through all that trouble to bring all the tapes, and it's exactly what he said it was, which is making these weird mixes.
That was a fun moment. All of them just listening.
It was a really good moment, and I love that track on the. They have that on the soundtrack. The like Was He Slow remix.
I feel like they let Ansel make that because it was pretty terrible.
Yeah.
Like that was trash. Yeah.
I think no, he definitely made that in GarageBand himself.
He's like, hey, can I make this myself? And he's like, yeah, for sure.
And yeah, that's a good line. Don't know the actress's name, which is terrible of me to not have looked it up beforehand. But Deborah. She was awesome. I don't know if she's from the South, if that accent is natural. I'm assuming it's probably not a natural accent, but she nailed it.
Lily James.
She's English.
Yeah.
Is she?
Yeah, right? She's the new Cinderella. Oh,
okay. Yeah, I've never seen her. I don't know. Yeah, she's English.
Okay.
She's the new Cinderella. Oh, she's also in Pride.
That's fat. I always say people from the UK cannot do an American Southern accent. She did it.
She was really good.
Yeah, dude, she's blowing up because she was the new Cinderella. She's also in Pride and Prejudice and Zombies, which was underrated. So
okay.
No, dude. It's,
well, I thought she was really good. I thought her boss at the diner was really good. yeah.
You know who was really great? Maybe the MVP of the movie? Was his, young his stepdad, Solo.
Foster dad.
Oh no, that guy did kill it. Like legitimately, he was awesome. But the actor that played the young Han Solo was so bad. This is like a little baby. He's just like, stop.
Oh, the one in the car.
Yeah. Also, it made me feel super old. That the main character of this has always had iPods in his life.
I'm just Isn't that crazy?
Oh. iPods came out when I was like in eighth grade.
Oh yeah, I was in high school. Aaron, you mentioned this in the thread, but it almost made you nostalgic and miss the click wheel.
Yeah, there's something interesting about that choice to use the tactile click wheel on the iPod when you could use, you know, anything really.
Yeah.
But I think we all had an iPod at some point.
Yeah.
And there's just something satisfying about spinning that wheel and picking your tracks. So I thought that was a really interesting choice. I wonder who came up with that. It's probably Edgar Wright, but... and I love the idea that he had like multiple iPods.
Multiple. He had like just because 20 of them.
You know, storage. Yeah, yeah. And the funny bit with the sunglasses. That was a great little bit.
It was a good bit.
And how many of those could, how many songs could those hold? Like those, because the iPod Classics,
like 2000.
They could hold like so many songs.
Yeah, it was.
They were like 300 gigs.
Yeah, it was in the thousands.
Oh, yeah, yeah. The early ones were like 2,000 to 5,000, and then they got into like way more.
Because we don't hold anything now, like comparatively.
Yeah. Yeah, just stream it.
That's true.
No, what you do is that you get on the family plan of Apple Music of your podcasting co-host and friend from college, and then just Venmo him money every month.
That's right. Apple Music. Man, that's what a great program Apple Music is.
I keep getting these emails from Apple about these apps that I buy, and I definitely didn't buy them.
No, I haven't bought a single app. I may have bought.
Well, you haven't. I'm paying for them.
No, I haven't bought any app. I buy movies, and then I reimburse you.
No, yeah, I got, you purchased a Starwalk app, an astronomy app. I have the receipt right here. I can pull it up.
Oh, that definitely did happen.
I don't blame you. I would buy it,
busted,
too.
Busted.
Well, so Starwalk updated their app, and they brought out a new app, and you got to get the new one. I got all the Starwalk apps. They're incredible. It makes looking at the sky a new experience, man. Opens your mind.
So I got another question for you guys about the ending.
Mm-hmm.
Did you think it was a good idea to have this kind of moral of the story feel to him actually like getting prosecuted, serving his time, and then ending with him getting out?
That wasn't.
We're not used
out.
To seeing movies do it like that.
That wasn't
at the
him
end.
Getting out,
or whatever.
That was a dream sequence of him getting out.
Oh
no, he got out.
No,
he got out.
That was like,
no, they give him 5 years.
That was the recreation of the previous dream sequence.
He had no priors. Young white kid. He got out in 5 years.
That was not him serving 5 years. That was definitely a dream sequence at the end.
So you think he's...
No, it was a different car. It was a different car, so that means it's real. You know what I didn't like is the fact that they gave him, like, John Hamm made him deaf, and then just all of a sudden he's fine.
Yeah.
Oh, man, if he would have gone full deaf, that would have been just terrible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That would have been good.
It would have been
good. That's the way to end it.
He loves music. That's all he's got.
He already has, but he already does sign. He'll be fine.
Yeah. No, I mean, I would have loved them to end it earlier, to choose a different moment to end it so we didn't have to go through the whole him going to jail, criminal justice system.
Yeah, I didn't like that montage. Like, I felt like that was, like, we didn't need to go through all of that. It did nothing for me. It felt weird.
I personally would have been fine if it ended on the bridge when he gave himself up.
You know, me too.
That would have been fine. Or, like, even before that, if, like, it was just them driving away, that's fine. Like, hey, maybe they get caught, maybe they don't.
No, he had to get... I think he had to get caught. Because it's he did a lot of bad things.
I love the idea that for the rest of his life he's going to be running. Because Kevin Spacey mentions that. Like, no matter what, you're going to be running for the rest of your life. I think that's almost scarier than prison.
Well, now that he served his time, he has peace. So he can get on with his life.
Yeah, no, that's cheap. Another thing.
That's cheap.
Deborah, great character. I feel like she's super irrational in how quickly she's ready to roll with this guy. Because he gives her so little to instill confidence in him, and she's just ready to roll. Like, she's the ultimate roll or die. Like, I mean, she's just incredible.
There's a lot that she doesn't know about Baby.
Oh, she knows nothing about Baby. She's been on, like,
a lot of reasons why she shouldn't trust him.
She's like, oh, there's your sketchy old boss. Yeah, I'm just going to go talk to him. Yeah, I'm in a bad mood now. Well, do you want to come in for coffee? Nah, I'm good. Like, she's got a, like, sister. Where are her female friends she's talking to him? And, like, yeah, I met this guy named Baby, and, like, I'm going to go on a road trip with him at 2 a.m., and we're just never going to come back. They're like, Deborah, what the hell are you talking about?
Yeah, that is the craziest idea. Just because this kid that comes into your diner with an iPod, an old iPod,
right,
and you're just going to... Like, that's crazy.
I feel like that's not the first time she's done that.
Oh, no, I want to see that movie.
Like, maybe she does that all the time.
And Deborah's definitely not her real name.
No. You know, it's a funny little bit that they do. She asks him if his mom calls him Baby. And he says, yeah, sometimes. So that was just his little... He was tipping his hand to say that wasn't his real name.
Yeah.
It's a nice little bit they did.
That's
true.
Yeah.
So, do we know anything about her character? Like, does she have family? Were they just dead?
A girl like that, by the way, has friends and a whole lot going on in her life. Granted, didn't have time to go into her backstory, but she's not exactly someone that's just doing nothing and then just working in the diner. Wasn't really buying that.
Well, she said her mom died.
Where'd her mom die? Like, what'd she say her mom died? Oh, she just...
Still got friends, though.
She was sick. Yeah, she was sick.
Oh, that's
sick.
Right. She took care of her mom while her mom was dying. That was a nice little detail.
Yeah, and then she said, once they're gone, you miss them.
That was nice. That was some good.
There were literally no moms alive in this movie.
So it's the exact opposite of Batman versus Superman.
Exactly.
No, their moms both
died. This was Edgar Wright's whole point. Yeah.
Those moms died early in that movie.
No, they live on forever in their hearts.
Wait, no, is Superman's mom still alive?
It's a movie about mothers, is really what this is.
Yeah, she's still alive. It's Martha, the other Martha that died.
Well, we are approaching on an hour, so we do. Let's wrap this up. I weirdly feel like we haven't given the movie enough praise, even though we've all talked about how much we loved it.
Go see it. You'll get it. If you're halfway at this point, you've already seen the movie.
It's so just spoiled. Yeah, it's one of those movies that you really have to experience it to really underappreciate.
It's John Hamm's best movie.
I mean, we can say
I'll say that
it is John Hamm's best movie. Definitely.
Definitely. I mean, you're
what's
Sarah
number two
would disagree.
For John Hamm, though.
Second best, John Hamm.
Yeah, she would.
Yeah,
number two is Million Dollar Arm.
No, keeping up with the Joneses, obviously.
Yeah.
I might put Million Dollar Arm above The Town.
Yeah, I mean, he does almost nothing in The Town.
No,
you can't. Who? Okay,
although,
let's compare the role.
I very
let's
much enjoyed him being on the other side of shooting out the police cars.
Yeah, me too. But let's compare his role in The Town to Mark Ruffalo in Collateral.
Oh, yeah. Skyler just saw Collateral for the first time.
Come on, who has the bigger role? Who plays the more important part?
Oh, for sure, John Hamm, because Mark Ruffalo's character was killed, and it's not even mentioned in the movie. Like, it's barely.
It was a weird.
Like,
it was a, that was such
he's
a
killed in the
weird...
background of a scene.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah. Oh, that
he
happened.
He was killed like Josh Brolin in No Country for Old Men.
Well, that's what Ruffalo gets for stealing Mexican valor. Why is he pretending to be a Mexican in that movie?
I think he's a white man pretending to be a Mexican in that movie, though.
I think that's what, yeah. I agree with Skyler. I think that's
he
what
plays
it is.
He's a white man pretending to be Mexican, which is okay.
Yep.
It's like, yep. It's like, it's just like Robert Downey Jr. nominated performance as a white man playing a black man. Which is okay. You just can't be a white man playing a black man. You have to be a white man playing a white man playing a black man.
Collateral came out at a weird time when Mark Ruffalo wasn't an A-lister yet.
No.
He was filmed in it before he'd become like, you know, like he had, what's weird is he filmed a couple movies after it that came out, or right before it, that came out first, right? That started making him a little bit more established. And when Collateral came out, he was much more recognizable. But the inconsequential role he has in Collateral makes it feel so weird because it's like, well, he's so unimportant.
It's kind of
and
an
we're used
movie.
To seeing Mark Ruffalo do important things.
It's an uneven movie, though. Like, the fact that they just let him die. And that whole thing was just so unresolved. Like,
but the movie was so good.
Oh, I love that movie. It's
dude, Tom Cruise in that movie.
I would have been fine if they didn't do the cinematography the style they went for, like, which is just Michael Mann's like last 10 years for some reason, like since Miami Vice. He just loves this like real gritty look where everything's
it was one of the I think it was his first fully digital too. I remember it was like a movie at the time it was a big deal because they did it all digital, nothing analog.
Oh, it shows.
It's
oh
yeah,
so
it does.
The quality of this video chat is actually better than
that's
Collateral.
True.
There's a weird.
It looks great on an iPad, but I'll say this.
iPad.
The
mini.
Opening scene.
iPad
pro,
one.
Pro, bro. 12.9. The opening scene where Tom comes in and he's got like this big gray beard. After that, like he's shaved at some point between the opening scene and the rest of the movie. That opening gray beard was just magical. Like. Man, I love Tom Cruise. He's just like the best actor we have.
Well, and he made Collateral right around the same time he made Last Samurai. They came out in the same year. So I remember seeing them
Samurai
one after the other
just
and just being like, this dude has range.
You know what? That's the thing nobody gives him credit for anymore because now he's just doing the Jack Reachers. He's doing the Mission Impossibles. He's doing Live, Die, Repeats. He wants to make these fun box office popcorn movies. But dude won an Oscar.
He's been nominated multiple times.
Mm-hmm.
He's
You know what we need is we need a John Hamm Tom Cruise.
Oh.
Ooh.
I was gonna say buddy cop, but I didn't mean it.
And we didn't hear any news about him dying during his big stunt, which means the stunt went well. So like Mr. Paul.
We haven't heard any news, actually.
No news is good news in this situation. If he was dead,
I don't know though,
because
usually
be
when it's successful we get a featurette right away, you know?
No. I think the featurette would have come if he died. Some intern would have been like, guys, Tom Cruise just died.
Wouldn't it be amazing if they kept his death a secret for like a couple weeks and they finally broke the news?
It'd be awesome if they filmed the rest of the movie in the case that he died and they just tied it into the movie somehow. But man, that all opening sequence in Mission Impossible 5 is just the best. Also, Michael Nyquist, RIP. He's the baddie in Ghost Protocol, one of the greatest movies ever made. Mm-hmm. So
that was a bummer.
RIP. Like, let's just be serious. For a second. We joke a lot about. A lot of people, but Michael Nyquist, one of the good ones. So, rest in power, bro. That's what all the bros are saying now. Rest in power.
Mm. Well, yeah, that was a bummer.
Stay woke.
Well, Skyler, please join us for future pods.
I'm back. Now that I got a baby,
in the meantime,
I got a pod.
Since you've been gone, there's been a lot that's happened in the world. But one of them has been this trend kind of thing. And I know you're like ultra liberal.
Totes, bro.
But, like, there's this thing going around where, like, liberals have become okay with making death threats on the president, even if he's, like, a despicable human. Just whatever you do, don't make a death threat. Or don't even joke about it being okay for him to die.
I'm going to be the bigger man on this. And that's why I have a photo shoot I just did with a pretty respected photographer where it's me and I'm holding a decapitated Mike Pence head. And so
I thought it was going to be Kathy Griffin head.
No. I'm not political. I'm not trying to be political on this one. So it's just me and Mike Pence, and it looks like I decapitated him. And so that's coming out soon. And it's.
I was hoping you were going to say John Bernthal's head.
Dude, John Bernthal is the worst actor in Hollywood. He single-handedly ruins every scene he's in. Like, I just hate him. I can't stand him. Like,
John Bernthal?
Yes. Like, honestly, he was the worst part of Wolf of Wall Street, and that's a movie with a lot of issues.
He was good in Sicario.
What?
He's in one scene.
What was he in Sicario?
Hey, David, Hey, Skyler, did you see It Comes at Night?
Oh, yeah.
I read the...
He didn't see it.
I read the Wikipedia plot recap.
There's nothing to spoil there. But, okay, David, did it feel like the guy who comes to the house is like a cheap John Bernthal?
He absolutely is.
Right?
I looked it up afterwards because I was wondering if he was related or something. But it's a very, very poor man's John Bernthal.
Incredibly poor man.
Yeah, yeah. Sad. Which is crazy because John Bernthal is a poor man's Mark Ruffalo in Collateral.
John Bernthal
and also
has one
question speed. About Bernthal.
Yeah.
He also has one haircut. He has the exact same haircut. He has the same haircut in every single role.
That's actually contractual for him. Like, it's in his writer and everything. He says he can't do any haircuts because.
Well, it's all hair plugs.
Yeah, he can't get a nothing. It's all in there.
He's like Joe Buck. He's just addicted.
Sicario, guys, if you haven't seen it, go see it. It's like the best movie that came out in 2015.
Yeah. All right.
I stand by
that. Ready to wrap this up, boys?
Great movie.
Yeah.
Yep.
Thanks for listening. Everyone go see Baby Driver. We'll be back with more pods next week. But seriously, Baby Driver is a gift from the movie gods. Go experience it. And just enjoy the ride. Go see it in D-Box. That's our brave little recommendation.
Yeah.
Pay the extra $5. Totally worth it.
Totally worth it.
And we'll be back next week to review The House.
Yes, The House, which reviews haven't dropped yet on Rotten Tomatoes, even though it came out today.
Let's see.
But I hear they're going to be really good.
So let's see. RottenTomatoes.net.
We'll check once more before we sign off to see if the reviews have been released.
Hey, we've got the Big Sick review coming.
Oh, yeah, the Big Sick, which is 97% in Rotten Tomatoes. Also, Baby Driver being 97. Two high 90s films back-to-back here is a pretty big deal. The Big Sick doesn't open wide till... I think it's next weekend, a week from tomorrow.
Yeah, I think it's next week.
Now,
yeah,
you, Aaron, saw it because it came out in L.A. and New York last Friday.
Well, I'm actually personal friends with Kumail.
Oh, that's right. You know Kumail.
Nanjiani?
I forgot about that.
He invited me over. Yeah. Whoa. Well, I just call him Kumail. Just one word. He invited me over for a personal screening, and it was pretty cool.
You must not know a lot of Kumails.
I approve. Persons. Yeah.
When does Ghost Story come out nationwide?
7th.
Sometime
when? July 7th.
July,
so
yeah,
next week?
Yep.
Ooh, let's do a pod on that. Guys,
okay.
It's a freaking incredible movie.
And you can tell us all about that dinner you had with the director of Ghost Story, David Lowery. Can't wait to hear about it.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. I heard there's an NDA there. Oh. So maybe you can't tell us about it.
I had to sign two NDAs. One that made it so I couldn't talk about the dinner. And one that made it so I couldn't talk about the NDA.
I broke it.
I got to delete this whole
episode. Does the second NDA specifically state you can't ask him if he's going to direct a Star Wars film in the future?
No, it specifically said I couldn't ask about Kesha being in the movie.
Oh, dude. Jerry Seinfeld in Kesha. Did you see that clip?
Of course
I did.
Beautiful. And you know
what? Let's sign off.
Beautiful.
Seinfeld was right for that.
One of the things I miss having you on the pod, Skyler. One of the things is I can never get these pods to end, and that's what's so great. So much good content. And, well, you haven't been on in months, which is probably one of the reasons why you're... We should have done a marathon pod is what we should have done. We probably got a lot to go over. But you'll be with us next week. We're going to do the Big Sick when it comes out next week nationwide.
And I might have...
It's a Ray Romano.
I might have a 10-minute recorded interview with David Lowery that I could bring on the pod, but I haven't told you guys about it yet, so...
Perfect.
Yeah.
Perfect. All right. Well, folks, thanks for listening. As we say...
Hold on to your butt.
Thank you for listening to the Brave Little Podcast. Hold on to your butts.